You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to Mint Dialogues, a weekly podcast where we focus on the big questions in personal finance and investing. My name is Neil Borate and I head the personal finance team at Mint. I will be your host for this podcast. The podcast is a Mint production and is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform.
Session's title says this is all about NFTs. I'll just quickly introduce who we have. We have Parin Lathia. He runs a crypto incubator called Biddler's Tribe. He also used to be with WazirX before this. Praful Chandra is the co-founder of a company called CoinEarth. He is actually the one who built the sort of the blockchain platform behind the MG Aster today. And of course, we have the executive director at SBI Funds, Srinivasan Jain as well. And Vishakha Singh, who's the VP of WazirX NFT, will be joining us very soon as well. Thanks a lot, all of you guys, for joining. I will actually start the session with what, you know, the title of the session is. And Praful, if I can start with you, what does it mean to buy an NFT? What do people actually buy when they buy an NFT?
So, Prasid, great question. And since such this is such a abstract technology and it takes time for people to wrap their mind around this, let me answer this in a slightly longish answer, but I will try to answer this with an analogy. So let's start by asking, what do you buy when you buy property? Okay, so let's take an example that you may buy a piece of land and you may buy a flat in an apartment building. What does buy really mean? Typically, buying a property means that you go to the local government's sub-registrar's office. You register there, which means you record in a register the fact that you are now the owner of this piece of property. And what you get from the registrar is the title deed of the property, which is basically a certificate in some way that you own that piece of property. But what does that mean, right? I mean, we go back to say, what does that mean? What does it mean to own this property? Well, here are ways to think about it. The ownership concept is basically related to the concept of rights. So when you buy a property, what you are buying is, for example, the right to live there, or perhaps right to occupy that piece of property. You're buying the right to resell that property in the future. You are perhaps buying the right to build something on that piece of property. Now, keep in mind that all these rights are limited, right? Even though you have, for example, when you buy a flat, you don't really get the right to build anything there. You're constrained by the laws of the apartment, right? The society. So that you're limited in that right, right? That you cannot build anything there, especially if it's in a gated community or apartment complex. Even if you have bought a piece of land, what you can build there, you are limited by the zonal property laws. So keep in mind that anytime you buy something, you are getting certain rights, but those rights are limited in some sense. Now, in the same sense, what I was talking about was, of course, physical property. Where it gets interesting is when you start talking about digital property. Right? Now, what does that mean? Digital assets come in many forms. It could be a photo that you have taken. It could be, of course, an art piece that you have created. It could be a clip in a video or a movie clip. All these are digital assets. Right? Now, what is interesting is that last week I was meeting with some movie studio houses and they call their creations property. Okay, very interesting. I found that very interesting that in their terminology, they use the word properties. So, for example, a movie is a property, a poster is a property, a photograph of a celebrity is a property, a song is a property. What is interesting is that if you think about how property gets bought and sold, the digital property, it's extremely cumbersome today, right? It's there is no registry in which you can register that, for example, Netflix or Amazon Prime has bought a movie. So there is no registry. So there is something missing there. And of course, there is no title deed, right? And that is one place of thinking about what blockchain and NFTs are, right? NFT is fundamentally a title deed or a certificate to something. And just like a title deed comes with certain rights, NFTs can come with certain rights, right? So when you buy a digital asset, which is you buy the NFT, NFT, of course, is a certificate of ownership and gives you certain rights on that digital asset. You are paying for those rights. I think it will be a mistake to think about an NFT as one thing. I think as we go forward, you will see variants of NFT emerge. Certain variants will give you the right to, for example, display that digital asset, for example, on a social media platform. Some of them will give you the right to reprint.
Ruffle, one second. We'll get to the variants.
Right.
Because I don't want to confuse everybody right now going to the variants, because we'll also have to get to, you know, things like the metaverse and all and what the digital space is all about. You talked about, you know, all the sort of the rights people get with, you know, with an NFT and how it is essentially akin to a land deal. Or I remember you and I discussed this long ago that it's essentially an end user license agreement.
Right.
I wanted to quickly jump to Vishakha here because, she's essentially running a platform which lets people mint NFTs, right? So Vishakha, if you could shed more light on this, on, you know, when you run this platform, now people are minting NFTs, but we are saying that, you know, you own your NFTs. What exactly is happening? How much right does the buyer get? How much right does the, you know, person who mints the NFT get? And what role does the platform itself play in this?
Okay, thanks a lot, Prasid. First of all, apologies. Took me a little longer to join in. I'm assuming the question of what is NFT has already been answered.
We are on that question. This was the first question. I came to you with sort of a variation on
it. Great. Perfect. So let's just, I'll just give you my take on NFTs. So I have been in the entertainment sector and, a lot of my friends in the creative industry keep on asking me what are NFTs, and the best way I feel, or the simplest way I explain it to them, is everything that you put out on your social media, right? Now, if you're an influencer, you clicked your pictures and you put it out on the social media, can be an NFT as long as you can prove the ownership of that, or as long as you can prove that you are the one who has created it. That's one. Two, if you're a film producer, you know, at any given point of time, you're about to release a film, you will incur certain expenses like having a, you know, your poster shoot, publicity shoots, etc. That's an expense. You own the IP of those posters. You have paid money for it. You can, now that has been saved on your computer as a digital file. Now, everything that you have created or you own the IP of and is in the form of a digital file can be put on the blockchain and can be put out there for sale as an NFT. Now, that's one way to look at it. We know NFTs are non-fungible tokens, you know, authenticated on the blockchain, supported by smart contracts, blah, blah, blah. But what are the actual rights? The beauty of NFTs from a creator perspective is that these are rights that were non-existential earlier. As a film producer, every time I had a film lined up for release, I would earlier go to and sell off my theatrical rights, my rights. Sorry, just got cut off. Yeah. So I would go and sell off these rights in chunks to basically recover my cost of production. Today, I can add NFT rights to that. Now, what is so great about NFTs? When you sell an NFT, the NFTs are sold only on the blockchain. They do not conflict with your rights in the offline space. The collector who has bought these NFTs will collect these NFTs, will probably display these NFTs, you know, at his home for bragging purpose, can even resell this NFT in the secondary market and generate profits, but cannot exploit these NFTs in the offline space for commercial purpose. So for instance, I have made a movie and the collector has bought the movie poster from me. As an NFT, the collector cannot now print that poster on a t-shirt and then mass produce it and sell it off as a merchandise. He doesn't have those rights. So this is the first bit of it, and then we'll get on as the conversation goes along.
Got it. No, that does make sense. Pareen, let me come to you. Now, there, you know, whatever NFTs are being minted today, we are all minting sort of NFTs on a particular platform, right? So to me, the correlation often seems like, you know, like when it comes to land, we have to go to something like a DDA or, you know, an authority body, which from whom we have to acquire the land, and then we can do buying and selling in future. So are platforms like these authority bodies today then?
I think your question is where you are minting makes a lot of difference. Definitely there are platforms like if you buy an NFT from WazirX, you can go on OpenSea and sell it. You can go on XYZ platform and buy something and sell it on ABC platform, as long as it is truly decentralized on a public blockchain. So if I'm minting it on Ethereum or Polygon or Binance Smart Chain, yes, definitely. It is an open platform. So anyone can come and mint and anyone can sell it anywhere. This is assuming that this is artwork that I've created as an artist, not going into films or movies or posters or land, anything like that. Assuming that this is absolutely original, my creation, right? There are also centralized platforms which say, hey, you bought it from my platform and you sell it on my platform. These generally don't make sense because NFTs are built on crypto ethos, which says it has to be decentralized. If I buy Bitcoin and I cannot sell it anywhere I want it to, then how is it different from fiat money? Similarly, if I am buying a painting or land and I cannot sell it without the government registry approval, then it is still centralized. Not that it loses all of its value, but it's not in alignment with the crypto ethos, which says that I should be able to own my NFTs or whatever it is. And just to broaden the context here, NFTs could be anything. My identity would be NFT tomorrow. Absolutely anything that is unique is an NFT.
Got it. Srini, you follow this space. You follow this space a lot. I'm given to understand you minted your own NFTs as well, if I'm not wrong. How do you look at this space? How did you come across it? And, you know, what do you think you can get out of this NFT space in future?
Hey, hi. No, first let me correct. I didn't mint my own NFT.
Okay, sure. I was wrong.
I have something on OpenSea, but that's not minted yet, and I don't plan to mint it. But I am a curious NFT enthusiast, I would say, considering that it comes in the so-called space of investing. So being something new, I have kind of dabbled and bought a couple of NFTs just to try and understand this space. And, I got curious a couple of years ago when this was kind of just picking up. And yeah, I started looking at this more from a point of view of how technically, we all know, like, digital files can be endlessly duplicated. Then came the whole smart contract and your ability to own a piece of it. And I was very curious, and that's one of the reasons I got into it. And I think over time, I've got to, at times I'm disillusioned with some of the hype that goes around it. And at times I'm extremely excited with the potential of what this could be. So at this point of time, I kind of sit in the corner and, look at all the development. And I also agree that this is very, very early days when it comes to where these NFTs could be. But and it's quite a, it's still yet a very non-mature environment for, if you were to think about it from an investment point of view. Those are my only thoughts, because you wanted me to know, tell what I feel about it.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think the concept of smart contract, which is basically what the underlying technology around this in a decentralized environment is, I think, a very exciting technology. And the use of NFT in environments today, which we have really not seen, non-speculative, non-rareable collective, is something that has a lot of legs. So, for example, rights and things like that, is something that is going to come up in the future, which is very exciting.
Sridhi, one follow-up question. When buying these NFTs, what kind of research you did while zeroing on a particular NFT that you would like to suggest to our listeners?
No, I will not suggest any. I think the research was very, very long. It took me, those days, because there are two problems in buying NFT, right? And I don't want to dwell a little deep into it. NFT, obviously, in this case, it's on a blockchain, and access to that has to be through a cryptocurrency largely. And because of that, the whole, and then for a very long period of time, owning a cryptocurrency itself was a gray area, or in fact, a black area, now gray area, still not a clear. So that's the first process. The first process was, I didn't want to buy a cryptocurrency, but I was forced to buy a cryptocurrency because I'm forced to buy an NFT. That was the first process issue that I had. And the second, of course, is how do you do that, right? Well, what are the platforms, Rarible, OpenSea? There are tons of them. And what blockchain, Ethereum blockchain, and many other blockchains. So there are tons and tons of variables. And there is a whole lot of research that one needs to go through. And definitely, it's not for somebody who's trying to make quick money by getting something. And also, my experience has not been fruitful at all. I think the whole ability to first get a cryptocurrency, pay for a gas fee, then, you know, there is so many variables in this. Obviously, all of these, hopefully, in the future will get better. But until then, it's probably not something that I would say for faint-hearted to look at.
So that's actually a thing, Pareen. If you remember, we were talking about this, you know, how when it comes to investing in crypto, a lot of people invest, you know, without knowing. But basically, you have to sort of understand the technology behind these blockchains and then see the potential of that, right? When it comes to NFT, is there similar advice that is possible? And Vishakha and Praful, please feel free to unmute yourself and interject us if you would like to add anything.
Yeah, I think definitely, see, cryptocurrencies are a much more mature market compared to NFTs. NFTs, people have just started dabbling into it. So like you asked, you know, how do you do fundamental research to know whether an NFT is valuable, is going to be valuable, or why is it even valuable? Right? For cryptocurrencies, there are certain fundamentals that are emerging right now. Not to say that this is mature, this is a mature market. There is still no clear way to value a cryptocurrency as well. It's largely speculation. But when it comes to NFTs, this is highly, highly speculative. Probably there is, if you were to ask me what is the value of a punk today, why are people giving, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to own a punk? It's just like saying, how do I value an MFSN painting? To some person, that may mean millions of dollars. To some person, that may mean nothing. So the inherent value of NFTs, trying to measure it, is like saying everything in my house today, right from my camera, my phone, my car, everything is a unique object, right? NFT is just a representation of that, whether it is digital or physical, it's just a representation. And in this representation, how do you value it? I don't know what is the value of my car unless I put it on OLX, right? And there is a certain benchmark. There are markets existing which help me value these things. In NFTs, when most people are referring to images or videos or GIFs right now, mostly there is no way to value them as of now. Eventually, there will be collectors, eventually there will be market researchers, auditors, and there may evolve a great art market. There may also evolve a great market where physical goods are valued on-chain. Right. So this is pretty, pretty early right now. As an investor, also NFTs are crypto. They are not non-crypto. If someone is offering you to buy NFTs with fiat, that's probably a big, big red signal. It's never going to be possible to buy NFTs without crypto.
Got it. You know, yeah, Praful, you want...
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree with Pareen on a couple of things here.
Thank you, Praful. I was just going to say that.
So the first thing I'm going to say is that, Pareen, it is going to be possible to buy NFTs with fiat very soon. And I'm going to pick you up on that in about a month's time. And we're going to have an interesting discussion. I do see your point. We will lose some bit of decentralization. I agree with that. But that does not mean that it is not possible. I'll just leave you with one thought to tease you, Pareen, as to what we are doing. Think of the traditional banking system as an oracle. And does that then make sense to say that you can buy NFTs with fiat? And that's an interesting thought process. That's something that we are working on. I do agree with Pareen on the first point, right? Finding the value of anything is hard, right? Especially in the digital space. But it's economics, right? It's basically the price of anything is supply versus demand. And any time an asset is offered to you, which is in the form of an NFT, ask yourself the following question. How many such things exist? and how many people want this thing? And that is the answer to your question about how to calculate the value. Now, if I take a photograph right now where I'm sitting a bottle on my table, perhaps not many people will want it, right? I take a photograph of, let's say my son has a photograph when he was born. Now that may not be valuable to anybody else, but it's of great value to me. But if I try to sell it, I won't get anything. But same time, you take a photograph of a celebrity. Now that's interesting because the supply is limited and the demand is huge. And that's why it has value. So that's where the price of anything comes in economics. Especially for digital assets, that's the way to think about it, because the cost of production tends to be zero. So you have to kind of say supply versus demand is the way to think about the value of an NFT.
Let me just chime in here, Prasid. So, you know, NFTs, whenever, if you're a collector who's wishing to dabble in NFTs and invest in NFTs, one of the ways you can actually decide which way to take is see whether you wish to invest in a one-on-one edition of an NFT, whether you wish to participate in a NFT project where they have, you know, multiple NFT drops like 10K projects, etc., or is it a Genesis piece? Now, NFTs being digital assets, it's very important to remember that the virality of that NFT or the NFT artist and the story behind this is equally important. So most of our collectors on the WazirX NFT platform actually do their research in terms of who is the artist, how long has he or she been in the space, and is there a prospect of growth, you know, in this artist's future. Apart from that, what is the emotional connect? Because while we do understand that NFTs can be looked upon as an asset class to invest in, the front end of it is an audiovisual experience. So from a collector perspective, it has to be an emotional connect. There has to be an aesthetic value. There has to be a story behind this. And definitely the social currency of the NFT artist makes a lot of difference. And a lot of times it makes sense to buy it from an NFT artist who's not anonymous on the blockchain.
Vishakha, one follow-up question. How does WazirX ensures that NFTs minted on the platform doesn't infringe on others' intellectual property rights?
So we actually have our smart contract, of course, is already in place. And apart from that, our creators basically commit to the fact that they whatever that they're putting up is something that they own completely and that there is no copyright infringement.
We've said smart contracts a few times now. Praful, if you could quickly explain what does a smart contract mean, just in case any of our listeners are not very aware of what smart contracts mean and how they work.
Yeah, so the most fundamental way of thinking about smart contract that resonates with me is that it is a digital escrow. Right. And if you've kind of understood what an escrow is, then you immediately get it. If you don't, then this is the way to think about it. It's a piece of code which controls the transfer of money, or in this case, when I say money, I mean crypto. It controls the transfer of crypto and also NFTs based on conditions which have been programmed into that code. Right. So, for example, the simplest example of a smart contract might be that if you give me 30 units of a particular cryptocurrency, I will give you this NFT. Right now, this is coded as a contract. And the beauty of this and the power of this is that once you code it like this, then once the crypto is deposited into this quote unquote smart contract, then automatically without intervention, the NFT is transferred to the other party. What you have basically achieved is that no kind of fraud or no kind of cheating happens between the two parties. So otherwise you kind of run into the problem of saying, should I transfer the money first or should I get the NFT first, since both are digital assets? So that's the problem that fundamentally smart contracts are solving. The fact that party A can deposit the payment and party B gets the quote unquote digital property without manual intervention and without requiring any third party to participate in that transaction.
Great. To the point of frauds, Vishakha, so today when WazirX, for example, is an NFT marketplace, in the physical world, we have auctions that are done by, you know, Sotheby's, Christie's and so on and so forth. And there are very established ways of authenticating artwork. There are very established ways of not just authenticating artwork, there are, you know, barriers to entry for the artists themselves, right? How do you replicate that in the digital space?
Well, you know, what we have been doing is we have literally been handpicking our creators to ensure that we get the most authentic and credible set on board to participate in the NFT platform, the WazirX NFT platform. So what happens here is once we get these credible, we already have this set of credible creators who've now come on board, there is a culture that has set in of authenticity. There are times, of course, when there are new creators who have come on board, while they're legit and authentic and credible, they do end up creating artwork which is, in their opinion, a tribute to, say, Marvel Comics character. But we know that there would be a possibility of an IP right infringement. And that is where we have the community that is empowered to flag such artworks, NFT artworks. And then we take the due, the call to whether take down the NFT or to, you know, let it remain on the NFT platform. Early days, it's still evolving, but the whole idea is to constantly make mistakes, learn, correct them, and then evolve and pivot.
Got it. So isn't the idea then essentially that we are sort of, I mean, if I compare to the, let's say, the physical world, would it be correct to say that the barriers to entry are lower in this digital model than it would be in a Sotheby's or a Christie's or, you know, a regular auction space?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you know, from whatever we've been researching on and studying and observing, in the offline space, in the physical world, when an art gallery hosts, they have these paintings and art shows live, the success rate in India is just about 7%, which means only 7% of these artworks get sold. Globally, that is at a 30%. Where 30% of the artworks showcased in art galleries gets sold off. In the NFT space, we have had a success rate of 36%. I think the only barrier to entry has been for creators on our platform. That has been from our side, because much as we did not want to, we did end up doing a bit of gatekeeping only to maintain the sanity of the platform.
Sorry, can I ask one question here, Prasid? If an NFT is a bundle of rights, ultimately rights have to be enforced by law, but Indian law does not recognize NFT or crypto for that matter. So then how does an NFT retain its validity?
So NFTs, you know, Neil, have to be looked upon as a digital asset. You're right. The government is still deciding on what crypto, you know, they're basically still coming up with the crypto bill. And we are hoping that it would be in place soon. Until that happens, there are these set of believers who will continue to transact and on various blockchains where this is supposed to be legit. Now, sorry, Neil, could you just repeat the question again?
Yeah. So, one of the examples given the question of what is an NFT, the answer was a bundle of rights, that if I buy an image, then I have the right to display that image in my home or somewhere else that's private to me, but I can't use, I think you only said that I can't, for example, use it to market 100 t-shirts. But that bundle of rights in other cases, in normal cases, is given by the, for example, the Copyright Act. So in this case, how do you enforce that right? I mean, tomorrow, if I do mint 100 t-shirts, how do you sue me? I mean, if the law does not recognize that.
Absolutely. NFT. So, and that is why we are on the blockchain. The blockchain is offline, right? And that is why we have the smart contract that puts in these predetermined conditions in place. And now anybody can do anything in the offline space, even in the offline space, in the physical world, while all the laws are in place, there are people who violate laws. And as I said, it's early days. We are still evolving, and there would be mechanisms to track these violations in the offline space. And we'll have to see. And
So, Neil, I think there's a fundamental problem in the premise of the question. Right? Let me kind of answer it this way. See, when you talk about enforcement, you're right that you need the legal construct to enforce the rights. Absolutely. But let me just also say that the legal construct is not the only way to enforce rights. Right? Let me give you an example to make it real. Let's look at, for example, Amazon Kindle. Right? Amazon Kindle started off as a physical product. Right? And then, of course, it evolved into an app. But if you think about what Amazon Kindle is, it's fundamentally a problem to DRM, Digital Rights Management Protection. right? And what Amazon has fundamentally done as a platform is said, listen, here's content. Traditionally, this content was sold as a physical asset, which is a book, right? But now we have converted into digital, but we don't want, if you buy that, we are happy to let you consume it. So what you're buying is the right to consume it, but we don't want you to distribute it. And how did they solve the problem? They solve it using technology, saying you can access this content only via this app, right? Now take that idea and decentralize it, right? And think about it like this, that if you can have an ecosystem where the technology players in this ecosystem start respecting rights of each other. So for example, if our platform issues an NFT, something that we are working on, and WazirX says we will recognize you, or WazirX recognize something and OpenSea says we recognize assets issued on your platform and we will allow these enforcement, or we issue it and Twitter says that we will enforce it and Instagram says we will enforce it. Now suddenly you have an ecosystem where certain rights, and I'm completely with you that certain rights absolutely need the legal support, but the point I'm making is there are certain kinds of rights which can be, I would say, de facto rights created by a bunch of technology entity players to help support each other. So I'm saying both rights are there. Absolutely, we need law, but there are certain rights that can potentially be enforced without law necessarily. It would be great to have the legal support, of course.
Yeah, I think also one of the questions Neil is asking here is that everything on the internet can be copied, and Shini had also mentioned this, right? Once I've bought a file.
I think that premise is false, right?
I get where you're coming from, that these blockchains are basically... Exactly. So when it comes to DRM, for example, Netflix, for example, will not let me go outside Netflix.
Correct.
It'll let me download, but I'll remain within
Netflix, right? That's right.
Now, what we are saying is that you mint an NFT on WazirX, it can go to OpenSea, it can go to, you know, wherever elsewhere, and it can move around this.
That's correct.
But now, if I've bought a file, one question that I often get is, what is stopping me from, let's say, taking a printout of this file and putting it up elsewhere as a physical... thing, or what is stopping me from copying this file and just transferring it to a friend?
Okay, so here is the, and again, this is a confusion. This is a fairly, this is a fundamental confusion about what exactly an NFT is, right? Keep in mind that when you are buying the NFT, the image on which you are buying the NFT is actually already in public domain. It is being displayed by the NFT platform from which you are buying it. So differentiate between the image and the right to use that image. These are two separate ideas. Okay. Having said that, your point is well taken. And I agree with the point that Neil and Prasid, both of you are making. And I also agree with Vishakha that enforcement of these rights, when it comes to converting a digital asset into a physical asset, requires the support of law. I'm not debating that. I'm saying absolutely we need law to support that, right? The only point I'm making is that there is a set of rights that you can protect besides without necessarily having legal support.
And Prasid, if I can just quickly add in to that,
yeah.
Say if you and I are sitting together, my laptop is open, and I have my Jio, say I have some share certificate of Jio's, okay, Reliance Jio, which is maybe just for the sake of discussion, worth 5 crores. If you download that same image, somehow on your laptop, the ownership of that still remains with me. All you've downloaded is a copy. That's it. So that's how exactly NFTs also work. Even if you download it, the creator will own the rights to it, and you will not be able to monetize it in any commercial manner.
Prasid, if I could add to what Prabhupada has said, I think we're crossing spectrums here. Let's understand, that under Indian contracts law, absolutely anything that I create belongs to me in any way. Whether it's crypto, NFT, recognized, not recognized, doesn't matter. That has been proven in a recent case that was filed against a hacker who had stolen some crypto. And in according to Indian contracts law, anything that is mine, if someone steals it, takes it, or otherwise copies it, I have the right to sue them. Practicality of that is that, of course, it's not very easy to do this and it costs a lot of money. So it's not probably in my best interest to do that. But again, here, the point that I think Praful was trying to make is that these are just representations, right? So let's say MF Hussain makes a painting. How do I know he made it? How do I know his neighbor didn't make it and he just copied it, right? The copyrights law in itself, what Neil mentioned, the law does not say that I have to go and copyright it. These days, people know that as long as I email it to my friend, it's there as a record that I was the first owner of this. And I think that's what Praful tried to say here, that this exists on an open marketplace. And I was the first person to upload it. That's how I know that it belonged to me. And whenever there is substantial incentive for me to sue someone, I can always go and sue them. The government cannot say just because NFT is digital art, this is not valuable. That's not for the contracts law to decide. What decides is whether I have an incentive enough to sue, pursue, and prove the fact that I was the first creator of this. Otherwise, any artwork could be copied and circulated. The DRM argument is absolutely valid for NFTs, but it takes it one step further and says you don't have to go to a registry to know who owns the rights to this. Today, I can download a book on Kindle and I don't know who owns the right verifiably. NFTs take it one step further and I can actually go on the blockchain and really verify it. So that's the beauty of NFTs here.
Yes, Shrini, please go ahead.
Srinivas, you're on mute.
Hey, can you guys hear me? Sorry, I got...
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, so I think the common problem with and common misunderstanding of NFT is the distinction between the NFT itself, the token itself, and the use of NFT, right? So the sale of NFT basically is... today I think, collectors or so-called investors do not actually understand how complicated it is. And that's what I was trying to say when I said, why is it still a big challenge to, understand NFT? Because I think the understanding of what rights do you have, functional rights you have, underlying access to the artwork or any rareable item that's there, whether there is an IP involved, not IP, many of them are still not without IP, right? You can still own something without an IP. And just for fun, right? Maybe just an access to do something. And I think while I think we're still scratching the surface of the value of NFT in the so-called virtual spaces, there is still a lot of clarity issues, right? I think the big problem you brought up is, is there a, like in the current conventional world, we live, there is a way to enforce certain things. There are laws and regulations. In the current NFT space, there is an automated process of solving for it. And that automated way to solve for it is still not well accepted because there are still, the whole decentralized world is still not a very well accepted practice. Until that happens, this is still going to be a massive risk for people to go in. Now, you have an OpenSea as a platform. What happens if OpenSea goes down, right? I know the token is still available on the blockchain, and that's what everybody would say. But then the whole network is down. And I have now a problem of getting my asset over to something, some other place, right? I think there are so many complicated issues in terms of owning NFT that today is still getting solved. Until that gets solved, I relate this to a physical, the dematerialization world. Before that, you had a lot of bad deliveries, a lot of these issues in the stock market. And then came your DMAT, then came it a regulatory teeth around it, and then it made it very easy for us to transact. Hopefully, in coming years, some of those clarities will kick in. Until then, this is, at this point of time, extremely risky to be owning an NFT. So you're doing it with a known risk that this could just be a 0.1 ETH or 0 ETH at some point of time, because that's what is going
to
happen.
But just to add a little bit of spice to what Srinivas said, reward is proportional to risk. So keep that in mind.
Thanks, Praful, Shirni. Folks, I think it's time for a Q&A session. If any of the listeners want to ask any question to our experts, they can send us requests. But please do keep in mind that this session is being recorded. So while Prasad is adding listeners, I have one question for our panel. We have seen like mind-boggling prices for NFT, 69 million, and so on. So do you think there is a bubble there? Srini, would you like to take up that question?
No. I think it's like every other asset, right? I mean, you put a conventional lens and think, is there a bubble? I mean, you ask that for equity market, you can ask that for anything else. And the question today is the virality of an asset, will it sustain or not is a big question, right? Some of these things are coming up, people 69 million sale or a crypto punk sold for a million plus, or even something like a LeBron James slam dunk movement was being sold. I think we are again living in a world where it's a complete demand supply kind of a setup. So, and the main question to ask is, are you a collector or a speculator? And I keep asking this question. If you are a collector, it doesn't matter. In the past, you collected artwork, not thinking whether it's worth 5 million or 10 million because you like it. And then if there is value to it, it's great. But the minute you start thinking about this as a speculative investment that I'm going to turn it around and make money, I think that's where you're getting into trouble. And that's probably the reason why a lot of these bubble discussions come from. And also comes from the fact that some of these things are spectacularly volatile. And because of this spectacular volatility, there is a thought around bubble. So valuation in an NFT is just imagine in a equity world, we have so much a problem trying to get valuation right. In NFT world, it's going to be even more difficult. So I nobody can call whether it's a bubble or not. But definitely lack of understanding of this asset is what makes it more people to think about it as a bubble.
Sorry, one quick question. Can somebody decode what a Bollycoin is, like these announcements by actors, Salman Khan, Amitabh Bachchan as well? What exactly is being offered here?
I think probably I'll have to be the person to do this.
Go ahead, yeah. Buddy.
they're saying is that there is some NFTs being dropped from Salman Khan films and some allied entities, and that are going to, those NFTs are going to be listed on Bollycoin marketplace. You can buy these NFTs only with Bollycoin. And right now, what they're selling is Bollycoin for a particular arbitrary price. When something like this happens, I don't know, because what gives value to Bollycoin in itself, I am not sure. Second thing, I think like Srinivasan said, that these things are highly, highly volatile. So before I even see the art, I am buying a coin to buy that art. That's, for me, that's just too many chains right there. Hey, if you list the NFT on OpenSea, X, Y, Z, any market, just to give you a context here, Salman Khan has fans who are really emotional about him. So did Paris Hilton, right? But Paris Hilton did not launch a coin to sell NFTs. That just seems like a very, very, I don't know what to call it, but it just seems like a redundant step at best, and something that may cause people to lose money at worst. There is absolutely no NFTs listed right now, which is probably a red flag that I can talk about because I'm not associated with anyone.
Yeah, so I kind of resonate with Pareen. I think it seems slightly tricky to kind of believe that. You're basically saying that it's two hops, right? First, you kind of say you need to buy this coin to buy the art, but we will not tell you what the art yet is. I'm not particularly a big fan of the idea, but I will reserve my comments till I see more coming up.
Yeah, the decentralized world has usually been about telling people what is happening first and then asking for the money. Achyut, you have a question, so please go ahead, ask your question. Please mention who you are asking your question to or whether it's to the entire panel.
Okay, so hello guys. First of all, thank you for hosting this awesome space. Lots to learn. My question will be to Vishaka. So I recently got greenlisted on WazirX, and I minted like four of my photographs, and I'm a 21-year-old photographer, and a firm reached out to me. They actually make frames, and they said that they'd like to use my pictures. They'll mass print them. They'll use them on their frames to sell their frames. So I wanted to know, if I've created an NFT out of my picture and I'm also using that picture to sell my pictures as prints, can I do that? Do I have the rights to do that if I have sold it to someone else?
Archit, that's a great question. And I think when you were minting, there were a couple of things that must have popped up and must have given you some more insights. I would recommend you go back and just read the terms and conditions once again. It will give you more clarity. But just to clarify here, once you've dropped your NFTs on the WazirX NFT marketplace, it's there for commercial exploitation only on the blockchain, which means your collector can buy that NFT and probably resell it in the secondary market if he or she chooses to, and make whatever profit that they deem fit, and you get a percentage of royalty. In the offline space, you can continue to do whatever you wish to do, you know, with merchandise, with frames, etc., whatever that you wish to do. As long as you have not listed during the minting, you have not put this in your description, you know, that you're also giving away merchandise rights. As long as you've not done that, you can do anything with it in the offline space.
Thank you, Vishaka.
Saurabh has a question next. I've added him as well.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, Prasad. So I'm just going back to that entire discussion of, you know, copying the token or whatever the art piece is. Say in real world, like even if you make a copy, the original would remain original. In the digital world where it is just pixels or binary, if you make a copy, somebody's speaking.
Can anyone mute themselves, please, except for the speaker, Saurabh?
Yeah, so just that. So basically, how do you, you know, sort of like, because a digital copy will ultimately be as good as the original. And whereas an offline world, you know, like artwork, if copied, will still be a copy. So how do you sort of differentiate between the two? Or is technology sort of, you know, will catch up later to sort of differentiate between the two? Yeah, that's it.
Great. Who would like to take that?
I think I can take that. Sort of real world is also made of pixels. If I'm reading a book, it is pixels. If I'm looking at a photograph that our previous questioner clicked, that's still pixels. I can absolutely make a copy and you will not be able to identify which is original and which is duplicate. This is precisely the problem that we are solving here with NFTs. Which means to say, at least in NFT world, you can go on blockchain, on the smart contract, and I am the wallet holder of that contract. So at least you know who the owner is, which one is original, which one is not original. That problem remains to be solved. We will see technology, AI come in and solve this problem probably a few years from now. But the step towards that is to say, at least, can I map who's the owner here? Otherwise, I can just, you know, make a brilliant copy of a photograph that someone has clicked and sell you without you knowing that I am not the photographer, right? So we are taking one step ahead. It's not complete solution as of now, but I'm sure there are people working on AI right now who are going to solve this problem and screen everything on internet someday, which will help them identify which is original because that was uploaded first.
So just to jump in here, what Parin is saying, it's definitely something that may happen in the future. But I will again emphasize, that's not the only game in town. There are simpler solutions here, guys. As I keep mentioning, think about Kindle. If there are enough social media platforms, if there are enough websites, and we have done this in the past. If you look at how HTTP has got adopted, how HTTP got adopted, how IETF standards get adopted. If the web digital media as a whole moves to a standard and the top 20, 30 platforms start saying that we will restrict you from listing content as an NFT without verifying it on public blockchains, we have a solution. Right? We don't really need AI to solve the problem, because what you are getting is a consensus-based model between multiple entities to kind of attribute the right content to the right person. And I think that is, that's going to happen much sooner than the AI solution. My bet is within 2022, you will see that happening.
If I can just quickly, I think again, what we're trying to solve, and the question goes all over the place. Copying an NFT is one thing. The smart contract and the value of that NFT, what you can do with this NFT is another thing. And what you can do with the NFT is more important than just the NFT itself. And that's where the whole value of NFT comes.
Thanks, Srinivas. Next, we have Chandra. Please go ahead.
Yeah, my question is that these NFTs can be minted on various public blockchains, right? So how do we solve? The same art can be, you know, minted on Ethereum or some other public blockchain. So it has multiple values at multiple places. And I don't know, how do we sort out all these things together? Thank you.
Yeah, I can take that, Vishakha, unless you want to go first.
Prabhul, you can go ahead and take it.
Yeah, so if you look at what's happening here, Chandra, is let me first give you an analogy and then kind of explain it, right? So I started the call by saying, keep in mind that you can get your property registered. Similarly, you can get your car registered, right? And in this example, I'm going to use the car example, right? So when you get your car registered in a particular state and you move to another state and you want to get your car registered in that particular state, you need an NOC from the first one. Right, that process is going to get digitized. The NFT marketplaces, there are some marketplaces which are already supporting this. For example, when we are building out our platform, we are integrating with OpenSea and Binance. Right, basically what that does is behind the scenes that NOC process happens. Right, so we kind of make sure that if you list here, you are not allowed to double list there. So you can do stuff like this. It's happening. It will take some time to get the plumbing behind the different blockchains, right? So that one asset once listed on one platform will not be double listed on the second platform. So that process has already started to happen by connecting these contracts with each other and by making sure that is prevented.
Sir, and just a follow-on question. So if you do all these things, again, it will be a centralized thing, right? There will be some guy who is providing bridge across all these blockchains. Then the verification thing happens, which means it is again, there is a centralized party to across these blockchains. Does it serve the purpose of this decentralization or
not? No. So we went completely off tangent. Why should there be a party? Why can't contracts talk to each other?
That one, if that happens, that is great.
That is exactly what's happening. Contracts are talking to each other.
Okay.
So next we have VP. He is waiting. He's been waiting for a while. Viresh Patel, please go ahead, ask your question. Okay, I guess Viresh is not here. Anyway, so in the interest of time, we also have to end it soon. Yeah, go ahead.
We have Vishali, last question. Vishali, yeah. Maybe would you like to go ahead?
Hi, thanks for inviting me. I wanted to just add to what Praful was saying, you know. I think, and then somebody said that, wouldn't there be a need for a central system? I'm working with a startup which is developing an app for tickets. Now, tickets for sports, basically, or any event. So I think, you know, just looking at that, so what they're looking at is you can sell the tickets, the person has the ticket, and you can then use that ticket to attend the event online, and then you can also sort of convert it into an NFT and keep it as a collectible. I was wondering, you know, you've got something online and dropped an NFT out of it. So let's say in terms of vehicles or, motor vehicle commission. So you can have a central database, which could be something that can be managed or it could be government sponsored and which would be all on blockchain. And imagine, let's say, where in future sometime we have self-driving cars and we could be using main form of transportation for that. Instead of owning the car outright, you could also, when you're not using it, you could start co-owning it and convert it into an NFT. An NFT could be used to represent that shared ownership and record the terms and sharing percentage, usage, etc. And same thing can go to fashion. Imagine you standing out in front of a shop to buy a limited edition sneaker. And you buy it and, you know, people have been reselling it for 10 times or more. And what if an NFT is created and then all of it is tracked? So it also helps as business, and all of it can be in, a part of smart contract where royalties get distributed or go back to the players in case of sports or to the brand of fashion, right? So, I mean, the uses are multiple. It's not just one-time use, right? Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm glad you said that, because there are many more sort of use cases that will come up with NFTs, just like crypto. So I want to end with closing statements. Srini, let me start with you here. Like Vaishali said, you know, there are use cases when in the traditional world, again, you had mentioned this, that when we buy stocks, there are so many things that we look at. In the future, do you see, you know, such things also happening with NFTs, where people look at the value of NFTs based on, you know, what it can become in future?
So I guess that's already happening, except that the information asymmetry that comes to when it comes to NFT is a bigger issue compared to, let's say, publicly traded companies or stock markets or any of those, or securities market. So the question today is the value which an NFT either is today or a value of the future is at this point of time seen speculative, because there's not much of a model or a history around investing in NFT. And that's probably the reason it's going to take a while for it to be called an investable asset. Right now, it's a very small alternative or a speculative asset. So I would definitely, caution people in overdoing NFTs. And secondly, at this point of time, the friction to buy an NFT, as much as I like it or not, is too high compared to any of the conventional assets. Today, probably you can buy a property, physical property, faster than buying an NFT, because there's so much of loopholes that you need to go through, the work you need to go through, even though buying property is still a most difficult process compared to buying, let's say, a security or a mutual fund or anything else. So my view around here is, eventually you will build better quality valuation understanding around what's the right value at which a particular NFT has to be bought. The plethora of choices, the plethora of information here is so much, it would virtually be very difficult to build models of valuation around NFT. But yeah, but I guess as long as...
Sorry, Srinivas, you once told me that you bought an NFT of your name. Okay. I was just curious, what rights does that give you? And can you value that? As in, is there a way to value that?
No, I bought it as a collectible. It's like buying something. So there is this project called NFT Names. A good friend of mine has done it. So he minted an NFT with my name on it. Basically, there are variables basically for my name. There is every time a country president becomes with some country has a name like this. So you get a lot of these variables which are collected. And there is a value to it over a period of time, but it's like buying anything that you think is going to be unique. Very similarly, I bought something that I think is going to be unique. And that's completely speculative in my mind. It's nothing to do with thinking that this is going to be a very large, collectible or something. Anyway, I think the NFT buying process for me has been very, very cautious, very, very experimental. Compared to some of those people who are putting millions and millions and trying to buy it as a speculative niche. So, to be fair, my view around NFT is evolving. At this point of time, I'm extremely cautious about overdoing it.
Great. There you go, Vishakha. We have to make this easier somehow to buy NFTs.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you, Prasid. And that's why I think Srinivas needs to come to WazirX NFT Marketplace to see how smooth it is. That's one. And two, yes, the opinion around NFTs is evolving. But I must add that, you know, out of the 550 odd creators we have on board, we have seen such beautiful human stories emerge out of what these creators have achieved out of their sales in a pandemic, and how much NFTs have literally changed their world. As Srinivas said, yes, you know, while the view is evolving, it's evolving, but one needs to be cautious as well. And from the Indian context, we have to remember that the market and the ecosystem is very, very different where we are. The purchasing power, the per capita income in India and Southeast Asia is very different from what we see in the West. And hence, we will have to set our own norms, build our own systems, ecosystems, set our own rules in place moving forward.
Great. So we are already past time. So I'm going to close the session here. Pareen, Praful, anything you would want to add?
Pareen, you want to go first?
Yeah, I think I agree mostly with what Srini said here. Being in crypto and knowing, you know, how valuable the technology can be, that doesn't mean that there are no risks associated. I think it's worth highlighting the fact that every technology that comes here goes through a Gartner hype cycle first. And I think, in my opinion, this year is hype cycle for NFT, which happened with ICOs way back in 2017. Let the hype die down. Really understand what's going on behind it. Let the experts do their job and build their oracles, build their price discovery, build secondary markets, and then go ahead and buy it. What is amazing is you can still go and mint something. That's almost free, right? So if you really want to go and try something, I would say go and mint it instead of buying it first. If you are not a collector who's really want to collect something. So that's my take there.
Thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week with a fresh episode. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach out to me at neil.b@livemint.com. To give us feedback, you can reach out to us also on HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Clubhouse. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno naye nazariye se.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HT Smartcast.
HT Smartcast.